With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning, and thanks for joining us this morning. Today is Monday, October 9th. Coming up in today's show, a California winner at the World Dairy Expo. We have an interview later in this show, but first we start this morning with Brian German.
The second annual Farm of the Future Field Day is scheduled for October 25th at West Hills College, Coalinga. Registration will begin at 8 a.m. Field demonstrations will be given across three levels for new farm management tools. Irrigation infrastructure will feature continuous pump monitoring and automation. Soil mapping, along with remote sensing, will also be discussed. Peer-reviewed presentations will be available to growers who want to better understand how data can be integrated to provide better farm productivity and resource efficiency. The day will conclude with an industry panel discussion on the status of standards that will give the control of data to growers. There is no charge for growers wishing to register for the event and a $40 fee for vendors. Farm of the Future Field Day on Wednesday, October 25th at West Hills College, Coalinga is being hosted by West Hills College along with Blue Tech Valley and Powwow Energy. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
The recent grain stocks report should reduce the ending stocks for both corn and soybeans this month. USDA's quarterly gain stocks estimate suggests there are fewer bushels of corn and soybeans left over from last year than have been reported so far. University of Illinois commodity grain market specialist Todd Hubbs says corn is off by 56 million bushels and soybeans are down 44 million.
I'd say one thing out of the stocks reports is just the idea that corn and soybean consumption starting to move. It's getting stronger as we move through the year, it feels like, especially in some areas that maybe we didn't see before, like feed. For the soybean ending stocks, they adjusted 2016 production, which wasn't really a shocker, but still it sort of changed the balance sheet.
Having said that, Hubs admits the 2016-2017 projected carryouts for corn and soybeans remains very large. It's possible to roll forward the September grain stocks report to forward figure the October USDA supply and demand table, or at least some of the adjustment. When you do that, it shows corn carryout at 2.295 billion bushels and soybean ending stocks at 301 million. It is a matter then, says Hubs, of laying off the heavy supply side against growing consumption, which for the moment is hampered by low river water levels that have been causing transportation problems to the Gulf of Mexico.
The strong demand and the strong consumption we've been seeing is a good sign as we move through the next marketing year if we can keep it up. But right now we're suffering under these supply and transportation issues.
It's not to say a bullish market is around the corner, but that demand should provide a series of market opportunities over the coming months. The business of growing mushrooms is becoming more concentrated as the number of farms declines and demand increases. Gary Crawford has more.
And now, a little music, very little, to bring us to our farm and food subject for today. Why don't you introduce yourself, okay?
I'm Mr. Mushroom.
Mr.
I can be a tasty treat. I'm Mushroom.
Mr. Mushroom sounds like Miss Mushroom to me. But anyway, here at the USDA's Farmers Market in Washington, we do have Ms. Mushroom. Can we say that, Ms.?
Absolutely.
Okay. That's Laura Phelps with the American Mushroom Institute. Never knew there was one, but it represents the commercial mushroom farmers of this country, which are becoming fewer and fewer in number now. Back in 2014, the USDA reported 358 mushroom growers in the U.S. Now it's down to 312. Production this past year, though, about the same as in 2014. So, Laura, you say there are fewer farms, bigger farms. What's going on with that?
We're getting bigger farms because of the financial efficiencies and production efficiencies that they can achieve. So the smaller farms are consolidating with some of the larger ones.
But Laura, you say there's something else going on?
Every mushroom is picked by hand, and all of agriculture is having problem with finding labor, and we are really having a struggle finding enough harvesters to work at the farms.
And for those unfamiliar with the mushroom growing, we're not talking about needing people to harvest a crop once a year. So Laura, how often?
Every single day. And so the farm plants about five crops a year, all on a rotational basis, so that there's always something fresh to go to the grocery store.
And mushrooms don't have a long shelf life, do they?
A mushroom that you would find in your grocery store this afternoon was probably picked yesterday or the day before. They're cooled very rapidly after they come out, stay on a refrigerated truck all the way to your grocery store.
So, Laura, with all this stuff, are mushroom farmers able to make any money?
Well,
come on now.
They would tell you they struggle.
All farmers struggle.
Yes, it's tough, but they're all family-run businesses, and they are third, fourth, fifth generation, and they all love it. So they might operate on a bit more of a shoestring, but you can always call mom and the kids in to help.
Laura says the hope is that at some point there will be an immigration policy that will help provide enough actual paid workers, because she says the demand for fresh mushrooms is growing. Growers having a hard time keeping up with it.
I'm Mr. Mushroom.
But there is no demand for talking mushrooms. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington. Much better.
The Agriculture Secretary notes the importance of taking research and creating economic opportunity from it during the latest White House Rural Prosperity Task Force Town Hall event. Rod Bain has more.
Research and converting it to entrepreneurial opportunities was a focal point at Thursday's White House Rural Prosperity Task Force Town Hall meeting. The task force chaired by Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue.
Well, I heard from a great entrepreneurs and from great researchers and people who are helping agriculture to be prosperous in the future.
The secretary told reporters after the event at North Carolina State University in Raleigh that continued public-private research efforts through USDA, land-grant universities, and companies would be instrumental in creating new, innovative ways to improve rural economies.
We're talking about technology, biotechnology, innovation as a route to rural prosperity in the future.
He adds that providing resources to help startup companies take innovations to commercial application is also essential.
That's what we do through NIFA and these competitive grants that we fund for basic applied research for better agricultural production.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
The Citrus Research Board invites the citrus industry to attend this year's California Citrus Conference on Wednesday, October 11th in Visalia. Join the CRB at 7:30 for registration and a free breakfast. Sessions kick off at 9 with a focus on ACP control and HLB early detection technologies. California Ag Secretary Karen Ross will address attendees, followed by a free barbecue lunch. Afternoon sessions include post-harvest technologies, biocontrol, and the very latest in citrus breeding and varieties. Pre-register for this free conference online at citrusresearch.org.
Your local DuPont Pioneer team doesn't take with you from the word go lightly, especially when it comes to forages. Just ask your fellow producers, folks like Amos Smith.
We have an awesome support team from Pioneer. I think that they're probably one of the reasons why we are successful.
And Bruce Cullum.
They'll come out just anytime you want to call them and help us. You don't get that from all your other seed dealers, but these guys are here all season long.
As well as Ken Felt.
Just know that, you know, the research that Pioneer's done, it really, it shows, and that the cows really do well with it, so we continue to use it.
Or Billy Rucker.
All in all, you know, seem like Pioneer is always in the top. I bleed green, and I bleed Pioneer.
Want a team that's with you from the word go? That's DuPont Pioneer. Ask them about leveraging the silage zone resource to produce the highest quality forages for your operation. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
Healthy soil can help protect your farm from drought and protect soil and water resources. Contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's Taylor Hillman. Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Continuing your agriculture news for you now. Although change in where excessive dryness and drought is occurring for the country as a whole, the total area covered in drought has risen from the previous month. Rod Bain has more.
What a difference a month makes in U.S. drought coverage. As Agriculture Department meteorologist Brad Rippey notes,
over the last 5 weeks, the coverage of anything from D0 and above, in other words, abnormal dryness and drought combined, increased from just under 29% at the end of August to almost 39% by early October, an increase of more than 10 percentage points.
And at the current percentage of the continental U.S. covered in some form of drought,
that brings us to our highest coverage of anything D0 or above since mid-January of 2017.
And the reason is a trade-off of drought coverage by region. While the Northern Plains and Pacific Northwest has seen significant moisture-reduced drought totals in recent weeks, excessive dryness has formed in parts of the South, East, and Midwest that were not impacted by either Hurricane Harvey or Hurricane Irma. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The American Farm Bureau Federation met with counterparts from Canada and Mexico last week to discuss trade issues relative to the North American Free Trade Agreement negotiations. AFBF trade specialist Dave Salmonson says the meeting shows a unified voice across the NAFTA partners on agricultural issues.
We think it's very important that among all the countries that industries can come together, and in agriculture has seen the benefits of NAFTA across the board in all three countries. So they came together to say this is an important part of our economy and we want to see the gains we've gotten from this preserved.
The meeting follows a similar meeting held in August between agriculture groups from Canada and Mexico, along with AFBF.
We had gotten together back in August to decide what commonalities we might have, and we all agreed that overall NAFTA has been very positive for all countries and denounced the fact that we didn't want to see anything go backwards. But we're looking forward to some modernizations, and the meeting we just had, we affirmed all of those same issues.
He says the main issues include standards and market access.
We don't want to have food safety standards used as a protectionist trade barrier, so let's base them on science, and there's a lot of agreement there. But at some point, they'll be talking about U.S. and Canada dairy trade. Within the TPP, there had been some new access for the U.S. to Canada. We hope that we can get that kind of access in the NAFTA agreements. We have issues with what role geographic indications labeling is going to take, so plenty of work ahead, and October 11th, the negotiators will be back in Washington, D.C. for another round of talks.
That's AFBF trade specialist Dave Salmonson.
Well, in today's livestock news, we have a report from the American sheep industry concerning the Agricultural Guest Worker Act, and also they talk about tax reform priorities and the upcoming BLM Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board meeting. With all that information, here's Chase Adams.
It was announced that the introduction of the Agricultural Guest Worker Act would be slightly postponed. The Ag Act, as it is called, is championed by Representative Goodlatte, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, and creates a new program for agricultural guest workers under the USDA, which would be called the H2C program. The American Sheep Industry Association has worked closely with Chairman Goodlatte and sees this effort as a great first step towards a legislative solution that gives sheep producers continued access to a legal and highly skilled year-round workforce that they've traditionally relied on. Through its legislative committee, ASI has pulled together a group representing Western Range Association and Mountain Plains Agricultural Service, which helped bring in foreign herders, primarily from South America, and sheep shearers with ASI's leadership to identify priorities for the industry. This effort has resulted in a set of benchmarks and legislative goals specific to sheep production. Our producers have relied on specialized guest workers since the 1950s to care for over one-third of all the sheep in America. With over half the regulations of the current H2A program specific to the sheep industry, combining these critical provisions into beneficial legislation is a top priority for ASI. The House and Senate begin floor debate on the budget resolution process as the first step in comprehensive tax reform. With the President's tax reform plan announced, a marker has been set. Including proposals to eliminate the death tax and streamline the nation's tax code, the devil is in the details as ASI and others urge Congress to maintain existing tax policies that farmers and ranchers rely on. Also at stake is the future of the Farm Bill. The House proposal would require the House Ag Committee to make $10 billion in cuts over a decade, whereas House Ag Committee Chairman Conaway has said he expects the final deal to leave the Farm Bill unscathed. America's sheep producers rely on a stable tax code that comprehends the ups and downs of agriculture. Specifically, ASI policy supports cash basis accounting, expensing of depreciable assets, and the permanent elimination of the death tax and gift tax, or at least a significant reduction to the burdens those taxes place on family farms and ranches. Elsewhere, the American Sheep Industry Association and many of its affiliates have submitted comments to the Bureau of Land Management's Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board. The advisory board will meet in Grand Junction, Colorado in mid-October to explore solutions to address the overpopulation of wild horses and burros on federal lands. With herds that already vastly exceed the appropriate management level across the West and growth rates in excess of 20% per year, range degradation and the loss of multiple use on public lands must be addressed. I'm Chase Adams for the American Sheep Industry Association.
Thanks, Chase. And I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West. AgriView with Evergreiner is next.
Well, hurricane season doesn't end until November. It'll take that long to total up the damages and the losses farmers suffered in those two monsters that hit back in late summer. Harvey swept the Gulf from Mexico to Mississippi, then up through Arkansas and Tennessee. Then Irma struck in Florida and Georgia. Cotton crops in five states were affected. Wheat shipping was disrupted. Cotton and peanut harvesting was just beginning when Irma hit Georgia. And a lot of folks are guessing what was left of Florida's orange crop. Now, you'll see figures of how much property damage was inflicted and what it's going to cost to rebuild. But farm losses will go virtually uncounted, except by farmers. Cotton, corn, soybeans, peanuts, pecans, citrus, and November is yet to come. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Griner, Ag Midwest.
In today's interview segment, Brian Winnikins talks with a California winner at the World Dairy Expo. Here's the interview.
A California winner at World Dairy Expo. I'm Brian Winnikins, and I'm with Aspen Silva. She has the grand champion jersey in the junior division here at World Dairy Expo. And we're going to talk with Aspen a little bit about her win and a little bit about her farm. And Aspen, first, congratulations. Well, tell us a little bit about the farm.
Well, thank you. The farm is Modesto, California. It's about 700 head. And I myself herd has about 30. And it just kind of starts with Holstein and jerseys. I used to be an only Holstein, red and white Holsteins, of course, too. But my sister was actually the one that got me into jerseys. She really wanted one. And a year later, I actually told my dad, I was like, I want one, too. So this is the one I bought about 2 years ago. And just kind of started from there. So now it's actually kind of taken, the jerseys kind of have taken over my herd. I have more jerseys now than Holsteins.
Oh boy, well, does that cause a debate at the farm?
No, not too much. My uncle that owns a dairy actually wants to become all jerseys. He's strictly kind of Holsteins right now, but over the last 3 years, he's really picked up some jerseys from our county fair, the replacement heifer. So he's starting to go more towards more jerseys. It's kind of hard to get rid of all the Holsteins and go from jerseys all of a sudden. So eventually, I think we'll be there. But it's kind of funny. My dad always says, stick with the black and white cows. They're a lot easier. The brown Swiss, he used to show with my aunt, his sister, and they were the mean ones. They're not very nice. They can be very stubborn. And from going there, he's like, I don't care. We can go from a different color from black and white. But no brown Swisses. I will not work with them at all. And we're like, okay. So we went to the short ones, jerseys.
We are talking with Aspen Silva. She is from the Modesto, California area. She has the grand champion jersey in the junior division here at World Dairy Expo. Oh, and there's one other part of this whole thing. This is your first time showing.
Yes, it is. I'm very blessed to be able to say I won grand champion here in Madison, Wisconsin with my first time showing. I was here when I was two with my aunt. She brought a Holstein, and she did fairly well, too. But I'm very excited to say I won here at an international show.
What's it like out on the colored shavings when you're showing?
It's a very cool experience. It's kind of like nervous, kind of like butterfly feeling. My mom always likes seeing what color it is, not really caring where it is. This is the color. She goes, oh, it's blue this year. But I'm emotional person. But once it comes to showing, I do not show it. My family always makes fun of me saying, smile out there, you won. I always have a very straight face. I think 2 days later, now it actually hit me how well I did. But they always say, smile, you won, laugh. I'm just like, okay.
So when you were out there and the judge calls your name, you're it, you're the grand, you have the grand champion. What was your reaction?
Of course I smile. I was very happy. But then I go back to that serious mode, keeping your showing. Because when showing, it's not just you won. It's still continuing afterwards. The judge is still looking at your animal, just still looking at, well, maybe should she actually have won? Maybe I should have took the other one first. So you still want to show her off even afterwards. So it's still, I'm going to go back to that mode of going, okay, show her still. Don't care too much. Don't celebrate until you're out of the ring, and then you can go celebrate.
We're with Aspen Silva. She's from Modesto, California. She has the grand champion jersey in the grand champion jersey in the junior division here at World Dairy Expo. Okay, so you're one for one here. What's your future plans? Are you gonna be continuing to come to World Dairy Expo? Are you gonna try and go for the 2-time champion now?
I mean, that was the wish. Hopefully, I do come back next year. I live on the other side of the United States. It is a very expensive trip just to get the animal over here and for me to come over here. So if it is in the budget, I will for sure come back next year if I have the animal still too.
Yeah, because when you get the grand champion, and normally someone starts to show up at where you're at and saying, can we talk about maybe purchasing that animal or something along that lines? Has that happened yet?
Yes. The second day she came, I wasn't even here. Somebody wanted to see what I wanted to price her. And from there, I decided to think she's one of my babies. I take all of them, very care of them. I treat them like they're my child almost. And it's a little emotional saying, okay, let's put a price on her just to see. Doesn't mean I'm going to sell her anything, but just to put her out there.
Again, congratulations. That is Aspa Silva. She's from Modesto, California. She has the Grand Champion jersey in the junior division here at World Dairy Expo. For AgNet West, I'm Brian Winnekins.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
The Citrus Research Board invites the citrus industry to attend this year's California Citrus Conference on Wednesday, October 11th in Visalia. Join the CRB at 7:30 for registration and a free breakfast. Sessions kick off at 9 with a focus on ACP control and HLB early detection technologies. California Ag Secretary Karen Ross will address attendees, followed by a free barbecue lunch. Afternoon sessions include post-harvest technologies, biocontrol, and the very latest in citrus breeding and varieties. Pre-register for this free conference online at citrusresearch.org.
Your local DuPont Pioneer team doesn't take with you from the word go lightly, especially when it comes to forages. Just ask your fellow producers, folks like Amos Smith.
We have an awesome support team from Pioneer. I think that they're probably one of the reasons why we are successful.
And Bruce Cullum.
They'll come out just anytime you want to call them and help us. You don't get that from all your other seed dealers. But these guys are here all season long.
As well as Ken Felt.
Just know that, you know, the research that Pioneer's done, it really, it shows, and that the cows really do well with it, so we continue to use it.
Or Billy Rucker.
All in all, you know, seem like Pioneer is always in the top. I bleed green, and I bleed Pioneer.
Want a team that's with you from the word go? That's DuPont Pioneer. Ask them about leveraging the silage zone resource to produce the highest quality forages for your operation. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We have more from the World Dairy Expo in Madison, Wisconsin. Here's Jamie Johansson.
Here at the 2017 World Dairy Expo, and standing here with me is Secretary Tom Vilsack, President and CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council. You started off comments today talking about the bright future of the U.S. dairy market. Highlight those and why.
First and foremost, we're celebrating here at the Expo the fact that we've got the greatest dairy producers in the world, and they continue to produce more and more milk, and the reality is that creates a challenge for us to sell the milk. We're going to continue to focus on selling it domestically, but the reality is no matter how well we do that job, we're going to have export markets to be able to stabilize overall markets for the dairy industry. So 95% of the world consumers live outside the United States, so let's sell more to those 95%. And there's tremendous opportunity, expanded opportunity in Mexico, opening up market opportunities in Canada, and emerging middle classes in Asia that are interested, opportunities to reclaim market share in the Middle East and North Africa, and emerging opportunities, if you will, in Latin America and the Caribbean. So there are tremendous opportunities here. But we have to be more aggressive. We have to send a message that we're in the export business to stay. We're not an in-and-out kind of exporter. We have to send a message to the rest of the world that we're listening, that we understand their tastes, we understand their need for different products, and we're in the position to be able to respond to those needs. We need to create partnerships with folks in those countries so that they know that we're there to for the long haul, and that's what we're going to try to do at USDEC.
It seemed that everyone's comments today were centered around trust, and you talked about building that 14 to 15% export percentage, all centered around instilling that trust. Take us through the highlights of that and how you can share examples of where that trust can be centered around.
You know, if you think about it, in order for you to try a product, you have to initially have some level of trust that it's safe, that it's nutritious, that it's delicious. We have that opportunity to create that sense of trust in countries around the world. because we have a safe product. We have one that's stably produced. We have one that's sustainably produced. We have one that's delicious and nutritious. So it's an opportunity for us to market U.S. dairy. And our goal is to go from 14-15% of volume to 20% and focus on value. Sell more cheese, 200,000 metric tons more of cheese. Sell more ingredients, 450,000 metric tons, so that we get the high value and the volume at the same time. That's going to increase the bottom line for producers and processors. That's going to stabilize the markets here. To do that requires us to have more people listening, more people creating relationships in these countries, in Asian countries, in the Middle East and North Africa, in the Caribbean, having more people present so that we understand that market. Not everybody likes pizza the way we like it. They might like it a little bit different. Let's figure out how we can create the product that they want. There are going to be 18 million new Chinese babies born every year. That's a lot of infant formula. Somebody's got to provide that. If their specifications are slightly different than ours, we need to figure out how to make adjustments so that we're able to produce the infant formula that they can use. We have emerging middle classes in Southeast Asia. We've got young people who want to eat out. How do we work with the food service industry, the fast food industry, to create the partnerships and the trusting relationship that allows them to rely on U.S. dairy?
You talked about the Asian market and other emerging markets, but you also talking about our neighbors right here, Mexico.
Well, that's our number one market, and we never want to lose sight of that. And I've been pleased with the fact that we've seen increased opportunities, notwithstanding some of the challenges of NAFTA discussions. The reality is we've put more resources, we've put more time, we've gone into grocery stores, we've gone into high-end hotels to be able to market U.S. dairy. We've worked with the Mexican producers and processors to promote more consumption of dairy products, and it's working. Today, 75% of all the imports of dairy products from around the world that go into Mexico come from the United States. It was 73%. So we're seeing an increased activity there. We want to preserve that. At the same time, we've got our friends to the north who've had a very closed market. We think that time has come for that market to open. We think there's time to put some pressure on the Canadian government to understand that their consumers are not benefiting from a closed market. And we think now is the time for U.S. dairy products to be more available in Canada.
You said that if they are aware of American dairy, they will buy it.
Well, look, it's safe. There's a great abundance of it. It's affordable. It's delicious. It's nutritious. I mean, and it's sustainably produced. What's not to like about dairy, U.S. dairy? So I think we have a lot to market. We have a lot to say. We have a way of creating that trusting relationship with consumers, with restaurants, with retail organizations. We just need to have more resources committed to that effort, and we have a plan to do that. And we've seen good support from state and regional organizations and from the dairy management folks. So we're confident that we're going to be able to be aggressive in the next couple of years.
Thank you, Secretary. Once again, former Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, current President and CEO of U.S. Dairy Export Council here at the 2017 World Dairy Expo. I'm Jamie Johansson. We are here at the 2017 World Dairy Expo in Madison, Wisconsin, and Marilyn Hershey is here with me. She is a Pennsylvania dairy farmer. Marilyn, before we dive into your role in the dairy industry and why you're here this year, take me through your operation back home in Pennsylvania.
My husband and I are about an hour west of Philadelphia. Our farm is about 40 minutes north of the Chesapeake Bay. So we are down in that southeastern corner. We milk about 850 cows, Holstein, registered Holsteins. Like to play around with genetics and genomics a little bit with some of the top end of the herd. But we've been farming for a number of years on his family farm.
Well, beyond just being a dairy farmer, you also serve as the vice chairman for the Dairy Management Incorporated Board. Take me through your role on the board and kind of highlight some discussions that are taking place right now.
So, yeah, I've been vice chair now for this is my third term as vice chair, and really enjoy being a part of the checkoff program and DMI. It just opened up my eyes a lot more about what really is going on and how checkoff is really trying very hard to get to use the dollars in the best way, in a way that we can sell more milk. You know, sell more milk is always the goal.
Well, as you said, the DMI is the checkoff arm, and it's using dollars provided from dairy farmers to promote the products across the country. Trust was discussed from every person today. Take me through how you guys are instilling trust from the farmer, but also to the consumer.
So trust is a huge thing we've focused on, and I think that's one of the differences I've seen since I came on the board 6 years ago, is seeing how important and how critical it is that we show consumers we give them that element of trust so that they know that they can trust us. And it is really important, and I do hear that from different people when I go out and speak at some different Rotary clubs and different groups. They do ask the questions about animal care, and they do really want to know that they can trust where their food comes from and it's coming from a good place. So we started this campaign this year called Undeniably Dairy, and it's been a great campaign so far. It's not just with Checkoff. It has also brought in a lot of the industry people and a lot of the industry businesses. So agribusinesses are on board with it. And so it's kind of across the country. It's not just a Checkoff initiative.
Well, congratulations, because you will be receiving an award this year at the World Dairy Expo as Women of the Year. And you clearly have dedicated your life to the dairy industry and to taking it beyond just your family farm. Tell me what this award means to you.
Wow. So this award has been incredibly humbling. And it's you know, I keep trying to think, is this really happening? Is this really real? And I look at the list of the women who were awarded this before me, and I'm like, oh my goodness. You know, it's just humbling, and it's an honor, and it's awesome. Our kids are coming in for this event, which will be a great family time, but it's just a very humbling time.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.